visited after we complete our discussion today for reasons that I think will be clear, and that's why there's this tripart declaration of war, Melech, Sanhedrin, and Urim Ketumim. But let me first turn to war non-Jews, including nuclear war, and then we'll go back to that final point. Insofar as non-Jews are concerned, it's very clear that there's no category of Machenes Mitzvah for a non-Jew. There's no Mitzvah of Samole, there's no Mitzvah of Kibush Aretz, and in light of what we said last time, Hashem Ish Milchama, Hashem Baal Milchama, that even a Machenes Rishus requires Urim Ketumim, non-Jews certainly don't have an Urim Ketumim. So that if there is a matter of Milchama for non-Jews, it's going to have to be in terms of some other category. The basic and almost intuitive response, once you analyze the categories of Milchama, is that non-Jews have no right to nuclear war. And indeed, that is the position of most Sfaradim. There are two notable exceptions, which I'll note in a moment. But that's the position of most Sfaradim, and I suppose that the position is best articulated by the Sam Sofer. In one of the Shuvahs, the Sam Sofer cites the Gemara in Sanhedrin, which says that Akum Lav B'nei Kibush Minohu. The Gemara establishes the principle that there's Mi Kibidi, there's nothing that is permitted to a Yisrael that is forbidden to a non-Jew, and the Gemara says, Vare Yabas Toyar, there's certainly no institution of Yabas Toyar insofar as non-Jews are concerned, and the Gemara says that that's not an exception to this principle. The question of Yabas Toyar can't arise. A Yabas Toyar arises only in the context of war, and if you establish antecedently that Menoyah can't engage in war in the first place, then there couldn't possibly be a Matir of Yifasayah. So it's not so much that Akum are excluded from Yifasayah, they don't have the Heter Yifasayah, if they're Lav B'nei Kibush, if they're Lav B'nei Milchome, then there can't be the opportunity for Yifasayah in the first place. That's the position of the Sam Sofer. It's the position of the Dvar Avrom. There's also Tshuva Mekoyach Shor that says the same thing. And Rav Chaim on the Rambam also takes that position. However, there are some who disagree. The ones who disagree are primarily the Nitziv in Chumash. And before the Nitziv, although he is less frequently cited, the Maharal in the Gur Aryeh of Chumash. The Maharal in the Gur Aryeh discusses the incident of Shem, Shimon and Levi and Dina, and how is it that they went and they killed all the people of Shem. And the Maharal's explanation is very simple. The Bnei Yaakov constituted a sovereign people, and hence, Bnei Noach and Aros and Milchama, they simply declared war on the Bnei Fez, and they proceeded to kill the enemy in the course of war. What the violation was Sirtzach, because it was under the guise of war, and that constituted a matter of Milchama. And obviously, as somebody pointed out earlier today, you've got to define what constitutes war and what simply rowdyism or riot action. And the Bnei Yaakov weren't simply a group of individuals engaging in a riot, they were the Shiftei Koah, they were already a nascent commonwealth. The Maharal explains that at some length. He points out that this was already an ummah, this was already a people, and they were vested with this right to declare war. The Nitziv establishes the same position, but on entirely different basis. The Pasuk dealing with Shvichas Domim that's addressed to Bnei Noach says, Shvichas Dam Ha'odon Ba'odon Domi Yishofer, Miyad Ishas Ochiv Edresh, Miyad Ish Ochiv Edresh Nefesh Ha'odah. There's a redundancy. It already says, Shoshaf Dam Ha'odah, Ba'odah Dome Yishofeh. Why repeat this? Miyad Ish Ochiv. And the Nesiv, incidentally, it's a posik that bothered other people as well. It's nothing to do with today, but has to do with another topic. The Iksava Kabbalah uses that posik to establish an explicit prohibition against euthanasia. There is some taking of life, which isn't wanton cruelty or meanness. It's not done because of feelings of anger or revenge. Sometimes it can even be intended in a beneficial manner, and alcohol PK in the theratus, that's miyad esofi. When the person is doing it out of a feeling of brotherhood, of brotherly love, alcohol PK is forbidden, but that's not the Nesiv. The Nesiv says that when is there an Isur Shechet Dam Ba'odom, the Pesuk says when it's miyad ish esofi. But if the people are not acting as brothers, if it is a time when there is no akva, there is no fraternity between the peoples, at that point there is no isur of shechas domim. It's an exclusion from the isur of shechas domim. So, like there's an ace lehalit, an ace lisnoi, as you find in Tehillos. There's an ace shalom and there's an ace mochomet. An ace akva or shechas domim. But in a time when akva does not reign in the land, at a time when it is a period of antithesis of akva, there's no iser of reshirto. There's no iser of miyad ish eshofi. There's no iser of reshirto, and it's not an iser that says that the benayah is not allowed to kill. So that as far as mochom is concerned, the majority of Afrenim maintain that there is no matir of Mochome, that Mochome, qua Mochome, is also for a non-Jew. That does not mean that all B'nai Noyach must be pacifists. As we saw last time, there is not always a need for a matir of Mochome in order to accomplish the same result. The concept of Reideh serves to permit action taken in self-defense. And just as an individual can act in defense of his own life, and the din of reidah can act in defense of another individual who is a putative victim, you can have an aggregate of individuals who are defending themselves collectively. You have society engaged in a war, in a defensive action, because there is somebody that's shooting arrows at them, or dropping atom bombs, or something in between. And their response may very well be in the category of and does not necessarily require the matter of Mochome. However, as we saw last time, there are significant differences between a response that comes from the category of Reidah or a response that comes from the category of Mochome. Primarily, whether the danger has to be a real one, a Reidah is either a Vadai, a Korob of Vadai, an Umdin the Korob of Vadai, we're not going to go into Hukas Reidah now, you have different Lashonis in Akrenim, but a vague suspicion or even the possibility of danger does not establish a matter of Reidah. Whereas for purposes of war, a war is mutter even when the danger is less clear, as we saw last time, that was the purpose of our discussion last week. That's number one. A, you need a matir of Mochome in cases where the danger is not as imminent, it's not as clear. And B, you obviously need the matir of Mochome if the defensive action is going to cost the life of innocent civilians. I'm not now terribly interested in defining the parameters of Reidah within the context of a military response. Is the guy who is producing the bullets for the gun a Reidah? Probably yes. You probably are justified in eliminating him the din of Reidah without invoking the concept of Mochome. But is the person who is supplying bread and milk to the army a Reidah? I doubt it. Maybe yes, we can argue about it, but that's some other time. But there's certainly a point at which the civilians who are losing their lives are in no way associated with the war, and those individuals could not be killed on the basis of America. The night watchman in the munitions factory is not contributing to the war effort. And he can hardly be considered a raider, but it seems to be in the categories of Raider. But in the categories of Mochama, you can strike with impunity, even if innocent civilians will lose their lives. Now, the thing that we have to discuss next is whether, in terms of the Neinoya, there is a din of Raider in the first place. Who says that there's a parish of Raider with regard to Bnei Noyah? There's little question, in fact, no question, that a Bnei Noyah may take action in order to eliminate an aggressor when his own life is in danger. And that's based upon a Gemara in Sanhedrin about Zion. It's clear that Bnei Noyah have the matir, at least, of Raidah. There is a concept of Raidah insofar as Bnei Noyah are concerned as well. But that needs further elucidation. Is it only the Nirdof who has the right to do this, or are there others as well? There are some who would maintain that it is the Nirdof and only the Nirdof who is entitled to take that action, that other people, that the Nirdof cannot intervene in order to save the life of a third party. And incidentally, the common law, and indeed the law in this country, is that a person may intervene to save his own life, that's a self-defense, but he has no right to intervene to save the life of a third party that is in no way connected to him and to his well-being. The din of raidah doesn't exist in the law of this country, or at least in that sense. Self-defense is not synonymous with raidah. I'm not interested now whether there were influences of the Shevnitz Menayat in the development of the Western system of common law. There may very well have been, and there may be Shitas Dechuyas which have influenced the development of that common law system. I'm not interested in that either, but there is support for the notion in Halacha that as far as the Menayat are concerned, if only the putative victim that can intervene to save his own life, but he cannot intervene to save the life of the third party. Yes.
Question when I say it, but what about your wife or your children or an elderly grandfather? What would all that be defined?
For whom?
Well, you said you can only defend yourself, right?
Bnei
Yeah.
According to this shita,
yeah.
It's not lahalokta, so why do I have to worry so much about it? If I take all of these shitas literally, then it's only for yourself. I might be able in a footnote to make the argument that the Bnei Noyah can do it for his son as well. No, I didn't say for the wife, I said for a son. And for that, I'd have to use other sources that are equally obscure that deal with what is tantamount to sacrificing your own life in order to save your son. You don't have the right to do that for anybody else. In fact, I'm not sure you have the right to do it for a child. But I'm sure you're afraid to say you can do it for a child. And that would have to be explained, I think, and I don't want to talk about it now. I think it's a new category of tachas avisecha yivonecha, that in halacha there is the notion, hilchos yerusha, I think I can show it easily in hilchos yerusha, with the concept of ein ovid me'ir together, but there's a Rav Chonon explaining one sheet and restraining that in some cases a son can inherit knas, nobody else can, and minuyim sororin halacha goes to the jerusha, but only for a son, not a brother or an uncle or a cousin. And I think that it's because of a new halacha, tachas avisecha yivonecha. And if tachas avisecha yivonecha isn't just limited to Yerusha, but if it means that the father and the son are really one person, because there is some type of continuity between the DNA structure or whatever, just as there is in the same person as he grows from babyhood to adulthood and old age, then it may apply to the Neinoyah as well. But why do I have to say Chidushim on Shitas Tkuyas with Neinoyah? Particularly when the Rayas aren't all that strong even as far as the Yisrael is concerned. So I don't think we have to, you know, Bnei Noyah will come to ask Shaila whether he's allowed to be matzil the Nirdof of the wife of the Raidah and the Nirdof is his own son. I wouldn't have any trouble being matzil without this Kiddushin because, as I'll try to show you, I think that for the vast majority of our friends, there is a din Raidah insofar as I'm there. So, now the second, it's probably the Chulis Ben Yehud, if I remember correctly. It's not terribly unbargained. Whoever knows who he is, it's one of these obscure, probably either late 19th century, early 20th century Chulis. Not very unbargained. Don't have to worry too much. The second point that has to be made is the sheet of Mitzvah in Reish Tzadik Vov, Mitzvah Reish Tzadik Vov. The Mitzvah says that there is a din of Reda insofar as Minerva are concerned, but Reda with regard to Bnei Noyah is only a Rishus and not a Chiyuv. Now, for our purposes, a Rishus will do, but he maintains that there is no Chiyuv, whereas in Bnei Yisrael there is a Chiyuv. Now, remember that in a wartime situation, when you have, if indeed you have two lines of artillery shooters lined up against one another, the person who is shooting first is doing it because he wants to save his own life. But in other situations, in modern warfare, when he's pressing the button because he needs a preemptive strike, the preemptive strike may not be directed against him. I'm sorry, the threat may not be directed against him, may be directed against somebody else, and he's off someplace where he is not personally in danger, and there you'll need the matter of Reidith, the Rishus, at least, to intervene on behalf of Sagan Dinirgov, even though the intervener is himself not personally endangered. Now, the Mintaskinos position is based upon a number of considerations. First of all, it's clear that there is no chiyuv of lisam adam reyecho in din ibn noyah. A Jew has an obligation to save the life of anybody else, and now there's a chiddush of reyecho superimposed upon that, that he is obligated to save the life of his fellow Jew, even at the expense of the life of the aggressor. Bnei Noyah don't have a chiyuv of lisam adam reyecho in the first place. So why should there be a chiyuv to intervene for Hatzolas HaMirgov when this is going to cost another life in the bargain? That's point number one. Point number two, even insofar as Dina Yisrael are concerned, Tosfos in Sanhedrin Ayin Gimel. Tosfos in Sanhedrin points out that we have two parashas of Reidit. One, we have a parasha called Maharis. Secondly, we have the parasha of the Ein Mashiach law in the city of Gemara. In the Gemara, the halach of Reidif or the Chiyuv intervene is derived from the pasuk of the Ein Mashiach law. You have this Nara Marosa, even if she would have screamed in the Soda, nobody would have heard her, wouldn't have done her any good. The inference is that if there would have been somebody, if there would have been a Mashiach, the Mashiach would have had to do something about it, so you have an obligation of a Reidif. The thing is, ask, why do you need two separate parshas? And Tosfos answers that if we had only the parsha of the Machteres, we would say that this din of Reidit is simply dispensation. It's a reshus, license to intervene, but it doesn't establish an obligation. You need a second parsha, kind of a shinoh of akos of lakit. The second parsha is designed to establish an absolute obligation. In point of fact, when the Rambam records the halacha of Bava Machteres, the Rambam says that Bava Machteres, the Baal HaBayis, has the right to kill the Reidit, but he doesn't say that he has an obligation to kill the Reidit. In Hilkos Ritzeach, where the Rambam records the halacha of Reidit, the Rambam says that there is an obligation, and love and an asay. If a kaseisa is kako, loy sof is enoch olov, he's not the posuk of the Gemara in Mishiyah, incidentally. Why the Rambam decides a different posuk, other than the posuk cited by the Gemara is not my concern right now, but the Rambam clearly establishes that there is an absolute obligation to save the Nirgov, even if it costs the life of a Reidit, in the ordinary Reidit, in regard to Bob Macheres, as being only a Rishus, and the Akronim have problems with the Rambam. I frankly have no problem with the Rambam. The Rambam seems to be very simple. Bob Macheres is a different kind of Reidit in the first place. A Bob Macheres is considered to be a Reidit. He's coming to burgle. He doesn't want to kill anybody. But since it's a chazok, a person cannot resist when people are trying to take away his money, he will attempt to thwart the would-be burglar. Therefore, since the burglar is aware of it, the burglar will defend himself if he is going to be attacked. So the burglar becomes the raider, because what's the best defense? The best defense is an offense. As soon as the balabais tries to stop him, he will proceed to try to kill the balabais, therefore he's a raider with regard to the balabais. However, there are situations in which the Bova Macheres is not at all a Reidit, and by no stretch of imagination can he be presumed to be a Reidit. If you hear somebody climbing through your window, and you go to the silver cabinet and take out the Shabbos lacquer and walk over to him and say, "Here, my good man, here's all my silver, please take it and go and leave me alone." And you've indicated clearly that you're not going to defend hearth and home. The Bava Machteres has nothing to fear. He is no longer a Raidus. What determines whether the Bava Machteres is a Raidus? The Balabais determines it. He has the right to defend his property, but it's not always prudent to exercise every right that you may possess. The prudent person isn't going to use force against the Bava Machteres. And if the Balabais knows that he's not going to use force against the Bava Machteres, then the Bava Machteres isn't the Raidus. He turns the Bava Machteres into a Raidus by deciding that he's going to follow his emotions and instincts rather than follow his reason. So that if the Rambam says it's a Rishus, of course it's a Rishus. If he doesn't want to kill him, I presume this is the person who's not going to offer any defense. He's going to give him whatever he wants. In that case, he's not a Raidus in the first place. Whereas if the Bava Machteres determines that he's going to put up a fight, then he has turned the Bava Machteres into a Raidus. But be that as it may, Tosfos says that Bava Machteres certainly standing by itself is nothing more than a Rishus, and according to the Rambam, the first Rabbi Yehoshua, it's no more than a Rishus, and we have the second parasha to establish an absolute obligation to say the Nirdof, even if it means taking the life of the Raidus. That's in Dinei Yisrael. Insofar as the dinim of Bnei Noach are concerned, in the parsh of Bnei Noach, we don't have two psukim. The parsh of Raidit, in dinim Bnei Noach, in the Gemara, is predicated upon Shevich Dam Odom Bo Odom Dom Yishofer. That posuk is used by the Gemara as a kind of a ribui. It's there, even though we have other prohibitions against Ratzifa, it's there to indicate that that all men may intervene, Bo'odom Dom Yishofech, even before the fact, the would-be Shefech Dam Ha'odom can be killed, Bo'odom among men, mankind has the right to kill him because he's a Raidus. Since there's no second parasha, says the Mitzvah Skinuch, this Posu can only establish a Rishus, just as Tosfos says, Bava Machteres by itself would only establish a Rishus and not a Hiyu. So according to Mrs. Kiddush, the Posu Shevech Dam Ha'odom Bo'odom Dom Yishofer should be translated as, by man may his blood be spilled. That there is permission, dispensation to do this, but that there is no absolute obligation to do this. So, for the Mitzvah Skindle, there is a parasha of Raidus, at least as a Rishus. In Acharini, we find one other source, and it's a primary source with regard to Hilchos Bnei Noach. And Hilchos Bnei Noach are very difficult to adjudicate. And basically, it's not hard to understand why. If you deal with the Shiloh suspecting Jews, if somebody comes to ask a Shiloh, so you have a Shulchan Aruch, you've got a Rambam, you have Shuvis, and if you're dealing with things pertaining to Shevach Mitzvos Bnei Noach, it's very hard because although it's clear that a goy who has a Shiloh, which is what he's supposed to do, he is not the recipient of Tzeir Har Sinai. There's no Masoira among people in Yisrael. So that they have a Shiloh, they've got to go to a Rav to ask the Shiloh. And the Rav presumably has to answer the Shiloh. The Gemara says that the Akum is Nanash for Shayyim to Mesi, Havli Yilmoy Vilay Lama. So where's he supposed to learn? He doesn't have a Rebbe who was at Har Sinai that could teach him, so he's got to go to the Rav. But unfortunately, we don't have all the materials at hand frequently. Or frequently, we don't have all the materials at hand for the simple reason that over the course of millennia, very few Bnei Noach have come to ask Shilohs, so we don't have the Shilohs in Hilchos Bnei Noach. But we have a few sources, a few classic sources. If a goy will come to ask how to be makir of a korban, and a goy can be makir for bonus is not as there, a bom is mutit to Bnei Noach, so we have full marochis in the Mishnah Lamelech. Dealing with Hilchos Korbanos insofar as Bnei Noach are concerned. In other areas it's harder. One of the classic sources is Rav Meir Don Plotsky. He has the Kuntres Ner Yisroel, which is published as part of his Chemdat Yisroel, and that is a rather exhaustive analysis of the Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach. In the course of discussing the Mitzvah of Dinim, the Chemdat Yisroel makes a significant point. The Rambam defines the mitzvah of dinim as, this agrees with the Ramban, I may have mentioned it last time, I don't remember, probably not, no, not this time, some other time. The Rambam says that what's the mitzvah of dinim, he analyzes the same parasha we spoke about earlier, the Maaser Shechem, Shimon and Levi, what are they doing here, what right do they have to execute the relatives of Shechem, and he says that the mitzvah of dinim is to establish shoftim to administer the first six of the Sheva Mitzvahs of the Noach, and the mitzvah of dinim is like all the other mitzvahs of the Noach. If you violate the mitzvah of dinim, you yourself are chayiv nisa. So it wasn't only the perpetrators who were chayiv, and the Rambam says their fee was being gezel. I suppose it's a kind of theft of services, but the other people who were there and they didn't punish the perpetrators, aim ro'u v'yodu, and they did nothing, therefore they were all chayiv misa, because they were in violation of the mitzvah dinim, and Shimon and Levi, as proper b'nei Noach, had the obligation to go out and to kill them, because they violated the mitzvah dinim. That's the Rambam's definition of dinim, fine. But the Rambam, in defining dinim, says that it's not only to punish people who have violated the Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach, but the shoftim that you are memaneh have an additional obligation, lahazir es o'om. And it's interesting enough that the Mitzvah Chinuch, when he talks about the mitzvah of minu dayonim, incorporates a similar concept, that among the chiyuvim of bezin isn't only to sit in the Torah, but to be mazir the people in advance, to cause them not to do things that are maguna, and to do things which are just and proper. But in the mitzvah of dinim, which is all we're concerned with right now, the Rambam clearly says that part of the mitzvah of dinim is lahazir et ha'om. It's similar to the mitzvah of Mechiyach Techiyach, which exists among Jews. Bnei Noach don't have a mitzvah of Mechiyach Techiyach HaMizecho, they don't have a Chiv of Argus, and they don't have the ordinary halakh of Lakushim in Zurich that flows from the obligation of Argus, but they have what is tantamount to the same obligation that comes from the mitzvah of Dinim, which is Lahazir Esau, and it's Lab Dafke, the established Noachai judiciary, and Bnei Noach is Nerach Deidach, or the Bedayin Echod, anybody can declare himself a Dayin. So any one of them has the obligation, Lahazir Es Ha'om. So there is this obligation to prevent the act from occurring in the first place. How does a Beis Din prevent an act from occurring? It makes speeches, it disrupts, it teaches, it does whatever it has to teach. It also engages in prior restraint. You don't want somebody to do something that may harm you, you run off the court and you get an injunction. That is part and parcel of Lahazir Es Ha'om. Says the Chemdat Yisroel that it isn't simply an obligation to prevent people from doing things by jawboning, moral persuasion, or police power, but just as a violator of one of the Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach is executed, it's a capital offense for Bnei Noach, so also can you kill a Ben Noach who would otherwise go out and be over one of the Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach. So Chemdat Yisroel, in effect, is saying that the elimination of the Roideh is part of the obligation that flows from this Chiyuv Lahazir Es Ha'om. For the Chemdat Yisroel, there is a halakha of Roideh for Bnei Noach, and it's not a Rishus, but a Chiyuv for Bnei Noach. They have an obligation to prevent others from committing Ritzicha, and it doesn't flow from the parsha of Roideh, it comes from the parsha of Dinim. So what? So it has a different name. But the bottom line is, you can shoot. What's the difference whether I'm shooting because of the parsha of Roideh, or I'm shooting because of the parsha of Dinim? it would then turn out, according to the Kandis Yisrael, there is the matir of Radiv, not only the matir of Radiv, but the chiyuv of Radiv, which would justify defensive wars in order to prevent the enemy from committing what is, at all intents and purposes, a violation of the Yisrael Shvichas Domim, which is one of the Shev Mitzvahs in the Nei Nera. Yes. Good? Alright. Yes. It can be stretched as far as I could stretch it last time. Although, maybe not as far as last time. Last time, I had dichotomous categories of and Ezra's Israeli Atzor. If we're not talking about those two categories, only the parish of Raidis, I have to go back to all the Afrinim, and how they define the threat that rises to the threshold level of what constitutes a Raidis. And it's a pretty high level.
Here, all you're interested in is doing anything to prevent them from being
over. Sure, but how do I know he's going to be over? Maybe he's just threatening, he doesn't want to do anything. So you're going to have a very high level of proof. Now, I think that if they're lined up with guns and they've already taken off the safety catch and they're pointing it, that there's an umnakor of levada that they intend to kill. You've got a whole army doing this. There may be other things that approach the umnakor of levada. Ain't nothing on. But remember that the response will be limited to the response that's permitted to the raided, the nirbo, or Lazarus on. Lazarus on doesn't need to kill 10 innocent people in order to eliminate this one guy who wants to be able to be a Sir. You can't kill innocent people, Lazarus on, to make examples of them so that nobody else will engage in war. I'll kill innocent people so those people won't kill innocent people. I'll set an example, that's not Lazarus on. Yes?
Yeah, it's all that mean,
then you could be also just
the fact that you have a police force working for you,
like you have
the in general by hiring
have
this
valuable
judges.
Who said so? If the police force doesn't do his job, I haven't been Yosef Mafia
with Dean. You can't point Diana to the most of the whole staff.
Only if they function. If they refuse to function, the Zainayach are not relieved of their obligation. If you point courts, the courts are corrupt. So what's good is it done? Well, they're ineffective because they labor under the constitutional constraints embodied in the Bill of Rights. I'm not advocating that, not advocating anything right now. But it's clear that if you have shreif team who can't do what the shreif team are supposed to do, that you have not fulfilled the obligations of Nei Nei. Yes.
Just one other question. About the concept they have to have courts, right, that you want from Rambam?
Yes.
How local, is that on a nation or on a city? I mean, Lachor is from a city from the Chumash, right? It's from the city or the
For Bnei Noyach. From Chumash, I can't prove anything for Bnei Noyach. Because I don't have parshas that deal explicitly with Nigui Dayonim. I've got one little word, one word, Zudimi. For Yisrael, you've got Shreitim Shreitim, people call the whole Sharecho. So there's a fee of the whole Tlach Tlach, the whole Yavir, and there's Yisrael, as far as I don't know, but it is the whole Tlach Tlach, or whether it's the whole Yavir, depends upon who you're saying in the Rambam, who you're saying in the Gemara. Bnei Noyach have an obligation to do whatever it takes. It's a very pragmatic. A Yisrael has an obligation to appoint a Beis Din in every city, even if everyone in the city is a tzaddik, Yisrael Eilam, wouldn't dream of forgetting to wash Negelas in the morning. What is the Beis Din for? There's a chiyuv of Midui Dayanim. It's far fallen. You need the Dayanim even if they sit, you do nothing all day. Better they sit and learn all day. That's a good job.
You say that with the Rambam, right, that they were high pieces but they didn't do justice. Right.
Yeah.
But my question is, let's say there's a worldwide fear. So if there's some crime going on in India, then an American Gentile would be caught. I'm asking, how worldwide?
They killed the Dnei Shem. The question now is, would they have killed the American Indians too? Not the American.
The who?
The Catholic
is not the Indians, wasn't it?
No. Because the Indians didn't punish Hamor. Right?
They didn't know about it.
What do you want from poor Hamor? I'm talking about the poor Indians. They don't know what's going on.
People in the outlying areas.
The Rambam's lotion is Heim Ro'u V'yodu. It requires personal knowledge. I don't think that the newspapers have an anonymous, maybe Grace Alun's in there, I don't know. But certainly it doesn't apply to anybody who doesn't have the power to do it.
What about a world court? Would there be a game for a world in today's times where
if the world court is capable of doing it? I'm not aware of the fact that the people in the world court necessarily have jet planes at their disposition so that they can take pea shooters or BB guns and run off and shoot. They would not be capable of doing it. I don't know. I mean, it's clearly the Rambam's concept is limited to the people who have the ability to do it. How you define the ability, I'm not sure. Now again, I'm not sure that Ben-Nair has to risk his own life to do it. In fact, I'm pretty sure he doesn't. That means that they're capable of doing it without risking their own lives, which is a pretty wide escape.
You're saying essentially that a superpower would have, they don't have to risk their own lives, does have an obligation to do this if they know the atrocities going on in that place, right?
Sure. I mean, what's going on in Zululand can easily be avoided without danger to anybody who wants to avoid this. And it's very easy. These people don't have planes, and if you're high enough and drop the bomb, there's no way that anti-aircraft fire is going to get at you. They don't have any aircraft carrier fire in the first place. It would seem to me at least, that in those limited cases, you could eliminate the aggressors without endangering yourself, and that there are people around who have the power to do it. And if those people don't do it, according to the Rambam, the Chayav Misa, they have an obligation to do it.
The superpower would be Chayav Misa, the government is.
The guy who's got the power to do it, yes. Well, I'm
going to start with this. Something like the Gulf War, if you consider that Iran was an aggressor against Kuwait, then the United States really had to step in.
Well, I'm not sure that Saddam Hussein is a little bit more sophisticated militarily than the Zulus. I didn't see that the superpowers managed to do this without casualties. They had quite a number of casualties.
If they're on fire.
I don't know. Well, that's also, endangerment. And that would be to put themselves in the back on it. If it could have been done, and there are cases where it can be done without endangerment. In those cases, it's clear that they're obligated to do so. Yes, absolutely. Okay, let me then go. Yes?
Is it maybe only spoke about a Bezdin that has jurisdiction over it?
No. Because the Rambam is over the people of Shem. What do you mean? He's a Haim Brovi Odu. He's not only the Sheikhim in Shem, but everybody. And presumably there were Sheikhim in Shem. There were. We had the must have been. So that if you see that they're not doing the job, somebody else has to do it. Whereas
you think within a given society, they're required to do it. I think that the United States should not be required to kill the Iraqis or something like that. We're not really a benefit of the Iraqis in any sense. We really don't interact with them.
Why not? How do you define a society? It's limited to the boundaries of the city, the state, the country, or planet Earth? It depends. It's all pragmatic. The extent to which you're capable of doing this. If you don't have mass media, then you can only reach the people locally by word of mouth. If you have other means of communicating, then your obligations may be more extensive. And if you can reach out with airplanes to punish people in the far corners of the earth, then you may have an obligation to do that. Who says no? These things all depend upon the circumstances. Yes. I'm not aware of the fact that the Sheva Mitzvos Bnei Noach recognize national boundaries. Now, what you're saying isn't all that far out if you could find sources to support it. And that's the problem with Hilchos Bnei Noach. I don't have sources. If somebody were to tell me that there is such a limitation and that any self-contained society can proclaim itself a society and therefore assume obligations for proportions of its nationals and hence nobody else has an obligation with regard to them, fine. I just don't have any writings for that.
Do you know that if a society without boundaries, they're all...
Jews are a society without boundaries. Trans-geographic. Transnationals? Why aren't they there? Unless you can prove differently. If you have sources indicating that, it wouldn't surprise me. I just am not aware of any such source. Yes?
So, would the Iranian say, like Iraq, where there's failing to execute the last opinion, would this, if America had something to do with Abhi, would they be able to kill the entire population?
Would they be included to kill the entire population or to do what? The whole population are guilty of violating Shabbos and Neymar? They would be included to kill anyone who is Chayiv Misa. And turns out everybody's Chayiv Misa, they kill everybody. And whoever's Chayiv Misa. There may be a lot of Neymar out there who are Chayiv Misa. Let me go on to the next point in some kind of logical order. The second point is whether, absent the halacha of Reidus, whether there is any justification for killing somebody in order to save your own life. And this, in terms of warfare, is very significant because the most powerful limitation upon the din Reidus is you can't kill an innocent civilian. May I kill an innocent civilian as a ben noyach if that's the only way to save up? I'm sorry, if that's the only way to save my own life? Is there a matir of pikuach nefesh that permits retzifah for bnei noyach even when there is no matir of reitz? Now, the distinction I made, I think, is a very simple one. If it's somebody pointing the gun, then he's a reitz. And I can kill the guy who's pointing the gun. But what if I want to blow up the atomic installation and there's nobody there except the night watchman who I don't think is a raider? Do I have the right to blow up the atomic installation because my life is in danger and in the process kill the night watchman who is totally innocent? That as a shaila for Bnei Noach. This takes us back one step. With regard to all Shev Mitzvahs Bnei Noach, first of all, is there a mitzvah of Yoreg Val Yavro with regard to the Shev Mitzvahs Bnei Noach, or with regard to all Shev Mitzvahs Bnei Noach, is there an obligation to suffer martyrdom, to allow yourself to die or be killed, rather than be over any one of the Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach? The argument in support of the position that a good has no a simple case, forget about all these modern cases and the ones that carry emotional baggage. You have a guy who's got a deathly illness. He's going to die. And there's a refuah. The refuah is for him to eat a piece of Eder Minachai. Is he allowed to eat Eder Minachai in order to save his life? Very simple. Is he allowed to be Eder, one of the Shev Mitzvahs Bnei Noach, in order to save his own life? Those who say that he has no permission to do so say that the reason is very simple. Why is a Jew allowed to eat a piece of Macholos HaSuris in order to save his life? Because the Mitzvah Machai Kohen, or Mutzah Shishmer Shabbos Akash, Shishmer Shabbos Arba, all those concepts don't exist with regard to Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach. And there are some who maintain that the Bnei Noach essentially has no right to be over any Yisr. And all the more reason why you need a matir of Reidus. Without a matir of Reidus, if it wouldn't be the fact that the life of the Reidus is forfeit, he wouldn't be able to be over any Yisr, let alone the Yisr receiver. There are others who maintain that Pikuach Nefesh is doyfer all of the chiyuvim of the Bnei Noach, including the Yisr Retzifa, and that's the opposite side of the spectrum. That's Nakotze Alakotze. The one who holds that is the Maharash Yafe, a perush on the Medrash, the Yisei Toya. He maintains that there is no Yorik Al Yavar and Shev Mitzvah Bnei Noach. For Bnei Noach, everything is Nitzche for Pikuach Nefesh, including the Yisr Retzifa. Which, I'll give you another context. Forget war. Somebody needs a heart transplant. And the only way they can get a heart is he goes out in the street and kills a guy to get the heart. Is the guy allowed to commit a suicide in order to get the heart? That's exactly the Maharash Yafe's, the problem, or the shaila that emerges from the Maharash Yafe. Now, I should be precise. The Marashrafa doesn't say you can go kill the goy to get his heart, but the Ben Noyach, a Jew may not be able to. In fact, I'm sure he can't. But whether the goy, even according to the Marashrafa, whether the goy can go and take the heart out of a living person isn't all that clear. It may be the case that when the Marashrafa says that the Isser of a Ritzicha is Nisr of Pikuach Nefesh, if only the Ritzicha of an Oinus, where there's force majeure, somebody says, either you shoot or I shoot you. Remember that the Rambam in Hilchos Yisrael Torah distinguishes between two kinds of Ritzichas. All Ritzicha is Yorik Bal Yavar, but what if I didn't allow myself to be killed and I went and I killed somebody else? Is there a thief who's his bezin? Says the Rambam that after the fact, I'm still an Oinus, an Oinus Rachmana Patre. Therefore, bezin won't execute. You did the wrong thing, but bezin can't kill you. Says the Rambam, when is that? Somebody takes a gun to you and says, either you kill or I shoot, and you kill. So you're an Oinus Rachmana Patre. This is this overwhelming force that was applied to you. However, if it was a sam of a vidudara, it was a medication that's also behandlo because it was kakur v'sakum, and is a loch of your gal yavar, and you proceed and you use it, then will kill you. Why will that involve in that or whatever? You'll get the appropriate punishment. Why will you get, what's the difference? So Nefesh Nefesh Slayim is the difference between whether the person has to, whether the person is responding to his own imperative or whether he's responding to some outside imperative. Was there a compelling external force or is this all the product of the individual's own volition? No one forced me to use the Avodah Zarah. I decided to use it because I knew I was sick and this is the only way to live. It was totally, completely my choice and my decision. Whereas where there is an external force, it's not totally my decision. It's a response to force majeure. Now, I understand. Sure, there's an intervening volition. Right. But there's still, this is a mixture of an external force. Whether it was an external force or it wasn't an external force. It's very likely that even to those who maintain that the Ben Noyach can save his life at the cost of violating one of the seven mitzvahs, but only the mokum oinus of that nature, not necessarily to be merape itself. Now, in the war situation, it's like being merafi yourself. So even according to the Maharish Yafe, I may not have the right to kill an innocent person in wartime just to save myself, the goy. The goy doesn't have the right to kill an innocent person just to save himself, even though his life is in danger. But put the Maharish Yafe aside. That, too, is a das yochid. It's one person, but two sources. The Mishnah Melech and in the Parshas Drachim disagrees with Maharish Yafe and says that this is impossible. Why is it impossible? Even though the goy may be able to be either on Avodah Zarah and Gili Aroyus to save themselves, but Ritzichi can't be either. Why not? Because Ritzichi has the Svorah of my foot because of the Svorah of my foot. Yes? It's not from Bachaiko and very difficult to explain. I'm not sure. I don't want to go through all that material now, but there is, Parshas Drachim has pages and pages. Yeah. All right. Let me then turn to another possible matir for warfare for the The category or the application of the category may on first analysis sound rather bizarre, but I don't know why it should be avoided. And that is the concept of a dovar she'enoi miskat. And what I mean is a situation in which the goy is engaged in shooting or in bombing, atomic installations, and he wants to destroy the military target, and he doesn't really want to kill innocent civilians, although he knows that innocent civilians will be killed. This is This is first a Dovar Shein and Miskavin. The first Matir is Dovar Shein and Miskavin, and then he will challenge the Matir by telling me that it's a secretion. But first, let's see if it's Dovar Shein and Miskavin. Let's see if Dovar Shein and Miskavin applies. The concept of Dovar Shein and Miskavin we find in Hilchos Shabbos, right? And why how what the standard classic analysis of why adultery in Scotland is mutter in Shabbos, because Malachas Machshavas also Torah Shabbos requires Malachas Machshavas. If I'm not a Miskavin, then it's not a Malachas Machshavas. Does the same category apply with regard to other Isurim? Yes. The Shilkis maintains that it applies only in Hilchos Shabbos. That's the Shilkis. For this reason, Malachas Shabbos will serve as the same. Tesvis maintains that it applies with regard to other Isurim, but not to any Isur that involves a Seer Mrs. Bezdin. I presume then that it wouldn't apply to Isurim of the Neinoyach either. Even if we assume that the category of Dover Shein and Niskaven applies across the board to everything, in modern warfare, we're dealing with what is a psikration. It may be a psikration to Le Nicolai, but it's clearly a psikration. Is the Akum permitted to engage in what is otherwise an Isseritziche if it involves a Psikratia? Anybody ever hear of such a concept before? Have you ever heard of the double effect theory? No reason why you should. There is one Noahide tradition that maintains that abortion is absolutely usur, correctly so in terms of Hilchos Menayah, but recognizes one category of situations in which an abortion is permissible. And the paradigm, the classic example of that exception, is a situation in which a pregnant woman suffers from cancer of the uterus. Do you know the cure for cancer of the uterus? No. It's called a hysterectomy. You take out the uterus. And if the woman happens to be pregnant when you are taking out her uterus, what is going to happen to the fetus? The fetus is going to die. According to the double effect theory, this is permissible because the purpose of undergoing this procedure, the intent, is not to kill the fetus. The intent is to cure the underlying malignancy. And that is a perfectly legitimate undertaking. The unintended, albeit necessary, effect of this procedure is to commit an act of feticide, which happens to be osteopathic, but so what? That is the double effect. The double effect, the unintended effect, which is illicit in and of itself, becomes legitimate when it is the unintended effect of an act which is otherwise clearly legitimate. What does that sound like to you in terms of our categories of abortion? That's a psychration, you know? So all of these people, they don't know the right terminology, so they got their other terms. What's the feeling? Yeah?
Is there a difference, though, in the case of sending like a nuclear bomb to destroy a military installation? There might not be civilians there. It's really only a self-exploration. If you see it stuck, that there aren't civilians
there. One thing, a
self-exploration.
I want to talk about a bad exploration. Okay? Yes.
But isn't it sometimes
in
an
equivalent
when you're
at war,
but does that
one... I want to ignore the question. A Sophic Segratia is like a Sophic Recision. If Segratia is also, then if the Benayah is also in Sophic Recision, then he's also in Sophic Segratia too. Now that again is a serious problem with the Benayah. Is a Sophic Buddha or is a Sophic also? What?
Sophic
Right. Sophic Right is... The former, for Kayak Mitzvah. And what about for a Goy? Is a Sophic also for a Goy? Well, you get the problem? If a Sophic is also for a Goy, then this one may not be. If a Sophic is Mutter, then this may be Mutter for a Goy. He understood I meant if Sophic Arise is the former, but Arise is in Sheva Mitzvah also. But not at all clear, Mr. Goy.
Isn't it Sophic Arise in the Sophic Arise?
You're probably right, although I can show you cases where there may be a Sophic Segratia. that may turn out to be a misasik. A selfish situation may turn out for other reasons to be a misasik. But it's not hard to devise a hypothetical in which there are people out there who know whether it's a misasik. I just don't happen to know. So for me, it's a selfish, but everybody knows.
Right,
it's not like there are other misasiks or kelim. Nobody knows what's going to happen. Or other cases where everybody knows what's going to happen. Yes.
What are the two distinctions, though? Just first of all, this might be A, you could argue this could be a situation equally, because when you're at war.
I don't want it. Nobody wants to.
Okay, but the other thing is, the woman will certainly die if it can be, right?
So.
Well, you don't know for sure that they're going to use that bomb and that reactor to attack your country. How do you know that for sure? It's not the same percentage.
Then change the hypothetical. Then deal with the situation which is not a bomb. I don't know whether they're going to use it. It's the plane is up there, and I want to bomb it out of the sky. And I know where it is. It's going to land in Amsterdam and kill innocent people. Just the facts? Make up the facts to fit what you need for the hypothetical. That's all. There's certainly cases in which it's clear that's not the problem. There is a source for this. The source is a Rambo in Orach Chaim. The Rambo says that on Shabbos you have a pot that's it's resting on coals. It's in the fireplace, and you've got hot coals surrounding the pot. That's how you keep the cholent warm. You put it into the oven far away from the coals, or you put it in the fireplace and surround it with coals. So the Rambam on Shabbat, a Yisrael can't remove the pot. Why can't Yisrael remove the pot? Because he disturbs the coals. And disturbing the coals is a secretion of kibbutz. The stove coals that get moved are going to go out, or it's going to kibbutz the mikvah. Yet says the Rambam, I can tell the goy to remove the pot. Why can I tell the goy to remove the pot? This isn't the shus of the mitzvah. That's not the matter here. So what we're dealing with is zamir la'akum for dover shena miskavim. That's a secretion. The goy doesn't even know that. He doesn't know this lomdus. That every coal gets extinguished at least in part when you move it. How do you need to know that? You wouldn't know it either if you didn't have the Ramah to tell you. If you didn't have the principles of Allah to tell you. It's a principle that we have, but it's not necessarily, the guy doesn't know it, let alone be machabim for it. So you're dealing with what the secretion of Yechalot. So how does it suddenly move it? So the simplest explanation is, Amir Alakim is Nisid Rabbonah. Imamru. There's a limit how much we're going to answer. The Chazal didn't answer Amir Alakim for a secretion of Yechalot. That's the simple explanation. There's at least one contemporary place of Binyamin and Silver in the Oz Nidbaru who maintains that Pshat and Rambo is really very simple. What the Rambo is saying is that for an Akum, a Dover Shein and Eskavin, which is a Psikratia, remains a Dover Shein and Eskavin. There is no principle that because it's a Psikratia, it becomes a Dover Eskavin. I don't quite know why. It may have something to do with how the mind of an Benayah operates. He may not realize that a psychratia is a psychratia. I don't know. I don't know if I'm pleased to say that. But what he says is that there is no, that for the goy, even though it's a psychratia, it remains a davar she'enai niskah. If that's true, then it should apply to other research as well, so that a dover shenim eskavin in the military context, if it is a dover shenim eskavin, even though it's a psikratia, it may be mutter for those shittas. But I don't think you can build too much on those shittas. I don't think that it's absolutely clear that an akum is mutter in a dover shenim eskavin, but I do want to emphasize the point I made before. Whether a haloch is true or not is one problem. But I don't think that it took Binyamin Silver to discover this principle, or the Sochet, or the Tzad to be Matir. There may well have been Shitas way back when that held that it was Mutir, and these were transmitted to Bnei Nayak and got incorporated in their code. So that the double effect theory may very well have a source. There are other things that they have that certainly have sources, even though they may not be Lahalochet. Their prohibition against divorce, maybe based upon the Shittas and Rishonim that maintain that the name Noach Abulah Baal is also forever, and there's no way that she can become Mutter. It's not Lahalochi, even though it's Noach, there's enough sources for her freely. But it's a respectable Shitta among the early Baiskim. And it's not at all unlikely that these things developed under the influence of whatever people were there to influence it. By that I mean people who were transmitting Shev Mitzvah to Noach. Yes. Okay? Alright, then let me. Yes?
Where's the Ramah?
is there a Ramo, let's see, Tri Shin Aleph. Don't I give it to you in the package? It's not in the package. Tri Shin Aleph. Let me go back. I've already indicated that there is a machlekes hapeskin with regard to whether there is a matir of Muhammad with regard to Bnei Nayak, and of course, according to the Nasiv and the Maharal, there doesn't seem to be any problem at all, but it's not as simple as it may sound. And that takes us directly to nuclear warfare, which is the modern day application of the principle I want to talk about. Even if a goy is entitled to engage in war, it's not clear that he can engage in war under any and all circumstances, or that he can act with impunity. There's a thesis in Shulis, firstly the Gemara in Shulis. The Gemara says that Malchusa the Kotal Chad Meshito Me'ar V'almo L'Miancho. The Malchus kills 1/6 of the world's population. The Malchus isn't punished. The Tesis says that this refers to a Melech who's engaged in Mochemes Rishus. Melech engaged in Mochemes Rishus is entitled to do what's necessary, but he can't exterminate more than 1/6 of the world's population, even under the color of a Mochemes Rishus. If he has more casualties than he is permitted, then this is in itself a reason to asser the war. The Chassam Sofer in Aruch Chaim, Chuvis, Simon Reish Ches, says that this is a general principle with regard to what the Melech is entitled to do. And he even talks about it in the context of war. He calls these, in the middle of the Chuvah, he calls these Gadririm Drushiim. He's saying it that they're a Drush, but he certainly means it in terms of Halacha as well. And of course the problem for the Chassam Sofer is that there's no matter of Mochom in the first place. But what he's saying, and it's a very significant Chassam Sofer because he takes the Gemara in a somewhat non-literal way. According to the Chassam Sofer, even if there would be a matter of Mochom, there's nothing that's going to result in killing 1/6 of the world's population. Not only that, says the Chassam Sofer, not 1/6 of the world's population that you can't kill, but you cannot kill even 1/6 of min echod or sug echod. I'm not quite sure what min echod or sug echod is, but I do know that if the warfare would require that you conscript people with blue eyes, and as a result, 1/6 of the blue-eyed people of the universe would be killed, that this is sug echod, is a definable category, definable class. Presumably, if you're dealing with a national entity, that's what I said before, there may be sources that talk about defining Bnei Nayak in terms of countries or nations. I think that for the Chassam Sofer, at least for this limited purpose, not for the purpose we did that before, but if you're going to kill 1/6 of the ethnic population of the area, it would then automatically become osir because the Melech, the Malchusa, has the right only for Chad Mishito the Alma, and the Mochomo of the Bnei Noyach is no better than the Mochemes Rishus of the Melech Yisrael, and they may have Rishus for Mochomo, but not if it's going to cause casualties of more than 1/6 of the indigenous population. Yes.
The reason for 6?
Yeah, the Pesuk. Well, the Choshlim and Mosayim with Nitrim as Karma. That's Chazal took that as a kind of a militia. There's 1,200 people. Shloim HaMelech, you keep 1,000, and 2 of them we extend for the Nitrim, for these watchers of the Kerem. You can extend the 200 in order to save the 1,000. You've got 1,200. So you're killing 2 to save 1,000. That's 1/6. That's the ratio. They're margarized from the postal. Postal is different.
It's not just talking about killing 1/6 of the enemy, including taking into account casualties.
Total casualties!
Right,
the Lashon HaGemara is Chad Mishpachato, Chad Mishito the Alma, including your own self-inflicted casualties, or the ones that you sustained in fighting the enemy. If you know that this kind of warfare is going to lead to casualties, and the Stakako, the total number of casualties, both of the enemy as well as your own forces, will be more than 1/6 of the population, of any identifiable population, then it's also.
That would also include, for example, a nuclear strike on one nation, they would definitely strike back. You have to take that into account.
Well, I don't know, but the 1/6 may be either of each nation
separate.
Sure, broke into this population, but it's got to be Minekel or Sugekel, whatever Minekel or Sugekel means. Clearly, 1/6 of humanity is Sugekel. 1/6 of a nation, I think, is also Sugekel. I gave the example of blue-eyed people. Isn't it a suit? I don't know. I think that it applies to any group that can be defined in terms of either ethnic or racial or national characteristics. Anything that we would recognize as a class. You've got to have some kind of common feature for it to be recognized as a class. Now, all of this doesn't mean necessarily that one has to engage in unilateral disarmament. And the reason for that is really very simple, and I'll go back to my Bob and Machteris. The case of the Bob and Machteris. I said earlier that while there is a matir of Reidit, it may not be very prudent to kill or to try to kill the intruder. It may be a very dangerous kind of thing to do. And if I came to ask me, I would certainly advise him not to put up resistance. However, if this person were to put a sign on his door saying, in this house, the Baal HaBayis will not exercise the prerogatives of the Baal HaMateret, I think you ought to have his head examined. Why did he have to announce it to the world? Telling everybody that you're not going to kill the intruder is an invitation for the intruder to enter. It's enough to invite him to take the family silver once he's inside, but you don't have to invite him in to take the silver. Unilateral disarmament is, in effect, telling the other side that you can do whatever you want, we're not going to defend. Let me restate the same thing. It may be officer to do certain things, but it's not officer to threaten to do what you're not allowed to do. I may know very well that in certain circumstances I cannot act in a certain manner. That doesn't prevent me from threatening to do it. Why shouldn't I threaten to do it? I won't do it, but I know I can't do it. If the threat will accomplish the desired end, and the end is itself legitimate, then why not? Who said this also? Well, it's similar. That's because you want them to think that I'm going to. Yes, that was the example of the Rosh Ruach. Hill Shav is threatening the attack is absolutely mutter, even though the attack may be also sure. The Rosh Ruach thing is exactly that. I can threaten the attack on Shabbos, even though I can't attack on Shabbos, and these goyim amaratzim that they are, they don't know that it's a bluff. Now, fortunately, or maybe it's not fortunate, but from one aspect it's fortunate, the other aspect it's unfortunate, the goyim of the world didn't hear the last hour. Therefore, they don't know that the warfare is probably usher. So, if they don't know it, then the threat to engage in warfare is a deterrent. The threat, or whatever the deterrent that you need to constitute the threat, is certainly mutter in terms of halacha. Yes. Mutually assured destruction makes an awful lot of sense.
I'm saying, based on the theory, that's a point.
Absolutely. All right? Any problems with regard to this? Then I want to go back to what I left out last week. And I think that now we're in a better position to deal with the problems that I left out. Because we have new concepts that we can use. What I didn't discuss is why you need a Melech, a Sanhedrin, and Urim Thummim. Why all three? What this checks and balances system? One is checking the power of the authority of the other. You've got a tripartite type of government and division of authority. I don't think it's that. I think that there is a reason for Melech, and a reason for Sanhedrin, and a reason for Urim Thummim. Let me start with Melech. One of the things that we saw last week I only refer to two of the distinctions of Raidith, or two of the ways in which Raidith is distinct from ordinary self-defense. I spoke today about the certainty of the loss of life if you don't intervene, and the harm that can occur to third parties, the killing of innocent victims, in the process of saving the life of the near-death. But the third, there was a third. What was the third? I don't have to endanger myself to save the Raidith. I do have to endanger myself in time of war. That's the definition of war. And when the Rambam talks about Muhammad, he says that the melech can be kaifa the om lotse. Do you need, knowing you need a melech? You need a melech because the essence of malchus is the power of fear, coercion. That's what a melech is. A melech that can't coerce anybody to do anything is no melech. What is it? He's trying to persuade you. A melech has the power to force. He can force lots of things. He can force you to pay taxes, and he can force you to go to war. Do you need the melech? Because milchoma, by definition, requires that people place themselves in danger, and that they be compelled to place themselves in danger. The only institution that we have that can compel people to do things is the melech. And don't confuse me with Bezin. Bezin is only chayf al amitzvos. Nochemes Rishus is a Nochemes Rishus, not a Nochemes Mitzvah. And even Nochemes Mitzvah is in a different category. It requires the Melech to be Kleith of the own Lotzeh. That is the essence of Malchus. The Sanhedrin can't do it. The Urim Bitumim can't do it. It's the Melech who's there using the police power of the state. The Melech is the chief magistrate, is the chief policeman. He is there to be Kleith of the own when you need Kleith. And since Nochomo needs it needs the melech to impose the kviyah, so there can't be nochoma without a melech. If I don't turn around and say, I don't want to go, who's going to make me? I don't have to endanger myself. Only the melech can force me to endanger myself. Yes.
Is the melech of Jewish laws that he made or chief?
Of course. That's the Rosh Hashanah. Same Tosim, they came to Shmuel, and they wanted a melech, and Shmuel gets angry. And the Ram and everybody else asked, what are they angry about? There's a mitzvah, so it's also more of a melech, and she's a mitzvah, and stop, and he will miss it. They're asking only for what they're supposed to ask for. So the Ram answers, but the problem was how they asked. They spelled out the prerogatives of the king. He wants the melech to impose the king's justice. That the melech can ignore halacha when it's necessary in order to preserve the social fabric, and he can punish even without edim and hasro, etc. Says the Rosh Hashanah, that's not what we need a melech for. That the melech does only when there's a breakdown of law and order. What do you mean? You're coming to Shmuel saying that you anticipate, you just came to Eretz Yisrael, I'm already going to have these problems. The people are already going to be reshoyim. They should have come to him and said, we want the melech. The Yilchem is Milchem Mishenu. They threw that in as an afterthought. But those are the two functions of a Melech. Who needs a Melech? You need a Melech because he's the commander in chief, and you need a Melech to impose the king's justice. The rest, that's all he's there for. Those are the two things that he's supposed to do. So, two primary things. You can also, in the race tactics, or other things, I suppose, but these are the primary prerogatives of the Melech. So that it's clear that the Melech is there because the Melech will be crazy. I need to see it. Okay. Yes. No, absolutely not.
Yes.
Yes. The am. The am. The collectiveness.
Part of the am.
So.
So why? So why don't I
have more obligation? What do you kind of say? It's called. Why do I have to be? Why do I have to be
called?
The best thing was to take an alamitzis. Oh yeah. Yeah. Best to be called. And the whole Sibur is completely to go, then Bezin should be able to take this mitzvah to his brother and Yahweh. Yes, so first of all, it's Mokhan Shushu. It's true. I'm saying that the thrust of the Melech is to be faithful. In Melchemish Shushu, it's absolutely necessary. In Melchemish Mitzvah, it's true, Bezin might have been able to be faithful, just as Bezin is faith on other mitzvahs, but Bezin is never faithful to put your life in danger. That's a new kind of fear. Where do you ever see the business pay the person to put his life in danger? Maybe in Mila, I'm not too sure. But this is a new kind of tefillah that the Torah vests in the Melech. His function there is as a kaita.
Oh, I'm coming for sure.
It's obviously. No, he didn't decide. You're assuming he decided. Remember, he's in Sanhedrin. He's Sanhedrin. It's not just him. He initiates the process, but it's not all him. So you, but, and there I see why I need him. I need him for kfiyah. So in the Mela, the Torah vested this kfiyah in the Mela. That's his function. Fine. What's the Sanhedrin for? Who needs the Sanhedrin? In the Chemist for sure. What is the Sanhedrin for? No. No. You haven't there were two of me for that. What's the Sanhedrin going to do here? I think the Sanhedrin is the Baal HaBayis in the Bo of the Machperis. What does the Baal HaBayis do in every Bo of the Machperis? The Baal HaBayis has to determine whether it's worthwhile or not. Is this a prudent risk? Do I stand a good chance of killing the thief, the burglar? Or am I likely to lose my silver and my life together with it? If I'm going to lose both, it doesn't pay. Somebody has to make a determination with regard to whether this course of action is prudent or whether this course of action is not prudent. Even putting that aside, there is a mitzvah of Muhammad. And as Mitzvah Sinah says, there is even an obligation to endanger yourself in war. But even a milchemes mitzvah does not require suicide action. Milchomo is kederech haloichani. You are never obligated to go out to engage in a battle when you know that you're going to be slaughtered and you're not going to win the battle. A battle that's foredoomed to failure, foredoomed to defeat, is never commanded. That's not part of the mitzvah. Mitzvah is derech haloichani. You look at your strength, the enemy's strength, you assess your capability, their capability, and if you think it's prudent, if it makes sense, if it's a good gamble, you go out. If you think it's a bad gamble, you stay home, wait for another day. You build up your stockpiles, waiting, abiding the time when you think you're stronger. Who is supposed to determine that? The Pentagon.
Congress.
In Halakha, who is going to make that determination? Sanhedrin. That's what the Sanhedrin is there for. The Sanhedrin is there to assess the reality and to determine whether it's prudent or not. These are people who are prosecuting in the bushes. They're holding the lives in the balance. They will determine what's prudent and what's not prudent. You can't trust the Melech. He can go crazy for reasons of self-aggrandizement. Remember that part of the homeless, Lahar is Godler. He wants it to, he wants people to think he's a mighty king. And the only people that can be relied upon to make this kind of, can't rely on the Pentagon either because they're the generals. They want to ensure their jobs. It's the same kind of notion. The only people who are disinterested and dispassionate are about the Sanhedrin. That's their job. That's what they're there for. Yes.
The Sanhedrin
need
an act of war in order to determine.
Yes, yes. The Sanhedrin
is they can win the war.
Don't consult the experts if they have to.
The soldiers.
Remember, was it last semester I spoke about the Shvus Yankiv? You've got Kaisho against Kaikium. So it's on the basis of Roy team. I said, what was Askoma the Chacham Shavir? He doesn't have a medical diploma, but he assesses the risk and determines whether it's prudent or not. He's doing the same thing for Sanhedrin, doesn't know about him. That's the job of the Chacham Shavir. He's the only person who is dispassionate. He's the only guy who's really rational. Everybody else can't be trusted.
I mean, the culmination and not, the Chacham is never supposed to be prudent.
Who says so?
You have to say that as Baruch.
Really?
Yeah.
Where should I find that?
Yeah.
Only
Alki Ramayan Kikel says over here, if you consider, yeah, we have a
Hashem Yilochim Lochem Va'atim Taharishun when there was a tzivui to jump in the river. But without a tzivui Hashem to jump in the river, they wouldn't have had to go. Never face they would have to go without a tzivui. Milchama is only, there even a milchemes mitzvah is only kederach haloichani. Never risks that go beyond that.
There is Let me ask you.
Well, we said that, the Moroccans didn't say anything that was wrong. Who said the Moroccans were wrong?
The
Moroccans said everything was true. He said, look at the Ramban, there's the whole problem.
Yeah,
why does Moshe send them in the first place? Why does Moshe send them in the first place? What does he need them for? The fact that he sent them in the first place was because you're going to undertake this kederach aloyrami. You're going to have to decide how you're going to attack, where you're going to attack, when you're going to attack. You don't want to attack and suffer casualties for no good reason. Nor will you attack when you know in advance that you're going to be defeated unless there's a specific tzivui Hashem, go now. In Yam Suf there was. But in the Mechoma of Kibush Ha'aretz, there wasn't a specific tzivui, go this minute and do this. In fact, here first and then there, rather than there and then here. There was never a chiyuv to go and to fight if you knew in advance that you'd be wiped out. And what's not going to work with the point being?
So most should have agreed with that with Morocco.
So look at the Ramban. That's the Ramban's problem. That's the Ramban. More than one place. I mean, So Ramban and Yericha, he said that Yericha was the samol of how the Kemohama would have been conducted had they really been Yerayim and Shlemim, there wouldn't have been Bechet. There it would have been Bederach Nes. No, Bederach Nes, all bets are off. But that was only Yericha that was Bederach Nes. Everything else was Bederach HaTeva. And Bederach HaTeva, you don't take risks that aren't true. Yeah.
What
do
we know from the Urim
Tumim? Well, now I'm coming to Urim Tumim. No. Urim Tumim didn't tell you successful. It said Aloy or Loy Sala. It doesn't tell you successful.
So they said Aloy, the Urim Tumim tells Aloy even though
it could be. It could be. I don't have any raya that the Urim Tumim guarantees that you will win the war. You know what the Urim Tumim is there for? I go back to the Nasi. And even for those who are chelik on the Nasi, I think that in the Seed's Svora is a Ryan that explains the Urim Tumim. The Urim Tumim is there because when is war permissible? Not in an Ace Sholem. In an Ace Lishna. When Achd is Sholem in the world, you can't go to war. And Achd is supposed to be Sholem in the world. You need an Urim Tumim to create an Eich Lishna. The Urim Tumim is declaring that this is not an Eich Sholem, that this is not an Eich Achta. That's why the Rebbeinu Sholem, Hashem Baal Mekom, Hashem Ish Mekom, Hashem Baal Mekom. He's revealing it through the Urim Tumim. He's saying that now isn't an Eich Achta or an Eich Sholem. The Urim Tumim declares the war by saying that now a state of belligerency exists. Mimele, it's very mistaver that there's one case we don't need the Urim Tumim. Ezra Sisrom Yatzor doesn't need an Urim Tumim. Why doesn't Ezra Sisrom Yatzor need an Urim Tumim? Because who's declared the war? The war is already declared. They made it an Eitz Mohammed. You don't have to make it an Eitz Mohammed, it's already an Eitz Mohammed. If the Urim Tumim is there to make it an Eitz Mechomeh, when it's already Eitz Mechomeh, you don't need the Urim Tumim. Okay, that's just a matter of no nothing is well over. This is just my way of trying to wrap it up and try to explain what otherwise seems to be just Hilchos Sivui Kaina, Zeres HaKosuv, Malkovich Mishinai. You need these three things, but they seem to be overlapping jurisdictions, overlapping authority without any clear reason for why you need all three. If you go back to some of the elements of Mechon that we spoke about, it seems to me that each one had a particular function and served a particular purpose. Yeah.